and gentlemen, listeners and viewers, this is Ron Stefanski with another episode of Disrupt Ed, where we look at this ginormously disrupted world, this 5G wired, workforce augmented, globally interdependent, technology interconnected, AI accelerated, pandemic interrupted world that we live in, where the pace of change and the scope of change is blinding. It is so fast and so furious. And so we met upon a young gentleman who helped us to unpack what's going on in this disrupted world of technology. And so many of you engaged with us and said, wow, that was quite a ride. So I'm going to ask you to strap in, and we're going to introduce you to, once again, for those who haven't met, Jared Fink from Cosmic Wire. Jared, thanks for joining us again.
Hey, thanks for having me. Glad to be back.
Absolutely. You're going to look up at the, you need to look up at, yeah, look up at the camera a little bit. Thank you. Okay. Jared, as you're thinking about Cosmic Wire, you are thinking about a world that doesn't exist yet. You're already into the future, and the rest of us are struggling to catch up. And so maybe you could help us understand, where do you think this is going? What do you think the most visible next signs of progress technologically are we going to see on the internet, on social media, on all of this? Where do you think it's going? I know that's a big question, but give it a rip.
Yeah, I mean, obviously a lot to unpack there, but I think, you know, what we've been building and what we've been talking about in Web3 is it's all the stuff that, you know, it's this weird dynamic that I've ran into, especially in Web3, as I've like done these conferences and like watched this thing kind of evolve and what we've been building as a company and moving forward. And there is this like specific kind of age group that's right at the heart of it. And then obviously there's outliers everywhere, but it's these, you know, people that were born between like the very kind of into the 70s and through like the mid of the 80s. And there's this small pocket. And I kindly refer to us as the Oregon Trail kids. And we're the last kids that like will remember the analog days, you know, with like an actual landline telephone or plugging in your thing to get on, you know, your dial up and that crazy, you know, sound that we all remember. Or I remember, you know, being in middle school with my AOL one disc, right? And the interesting piece I think about this specific age group is that this is like all of the stuff that we grew up with. I mean, if you look at all of like the 80s movies and like that entire thing, it was all around this kind of like interwoven immersive environment. And that was literally like my entire childhood. You know, like my daughter who is six, I show her all of this technology and, you know, her wow factor is watered down compared to mine because, you know, kind of like it's to me, it's almost like similar to like when we went from like Nintendo and Super Nintendo to 64 and there was just massive aha moment, and it was the first time running around in 3D environments and we were all like blown away. You know, my daughter, I show her some of this immersive web stuff and she's like, well, that's cool, daddy, but I do it on my iPad already, or you know, like they're already immersed,
right? They're already thinking doing, yeah,
yeah. So it's like it's superfluous, right? And then like the older generation is kind of like watching it from a completely different vantage point because they'd lived their entire, you know, lives kind of analog. So like my father doesn't really get this at all, right? But no, you clearly do. Like, but I'm just saying, like, there's this weird.
No, but I think you're right. I think there are people like me, and you know, I'm in my 60s, and I grew up analog until my 30s, and so a lot of it is new. Or I think I you know what I think we lack sometimes is the ability to think in 3D. I mean, that's how I always feel. I feel like the internet puts you into a 3D environment, and we're those of us who are analog, born and bred, are in a 2D world. And now you're talking about adding a fourth or fifth dimension, and it's just going to pop our brains out. You know, we're just going to go, oh my God. So yeah, I think what I sense from so many viewers that responded to your first sort of foray into this was that you know, they may not have understood half of what you said, but they felt better after hearing it because you gave them confidence that the world is working on a certain trajectory and it's not going to be bad. It's going to be good. I mean, isn't there a morality play playing out in technology now? You have the big gunners, the people who own 99% of the property and the wealth in the world, And then you have the rest of us scrambling around in this world. I mean, it seems to me that you have these ominous big forces that can really manipulate or influence things. And then you got a lot of us. And what we're looking for is community and to get connected. And for us, we have to prop up the good things about technology, the democratization of technology, the ability to give people access to education, the ability to do a job from around the world, all those things that technology connects us with. But, there are also, I mean, cybersecurity threats are up 3,000%. There are terrorists. I mean, there are cyber terrorists out there. So what do you make of it? How do you think the good guys are going to win in this?
Well, I think winning is relative. To me, I feel like, you said it. When people ask me like what I think Web3 is or what this all is, I think it can be boiled down into one word, in this community. And I think that that's just like a human condition. Even since like when we were doing hieroglyphs, right? Like we've always been using whatever means that we have to communicate ideas and kind of manifest like, our internal thoughts into something tangible, so we can all relate, because we're all sharing this kind of human condition, right? And we are in this extremely kind of click-funneled, rabbit-holed version of the mousetrap we built for ourselves right now, where we've kind of put ourselves into echo chambers of just nonsense. And it doesn't matter what it is, if it's political or how you tie a knot or make spaghetti, it doesn't matter. Like, people are surrounding themselves that are like-minded and kind of like, reinforce those beliefs. And I think that this is the antidote or the antiseptic to that kind of ideology or that thought process. I mean, if you think about, at least when I grew up, in grade school, and we were doing our first book reports, I remember like one of the first things that we always had to do was like go find 5 or 10 sources, and they can't be the same. Like, you have to like
Right.
coalesce or synergize from different sources to come up with novel thought, not like read 10 chapters of the same book and then regurgitate, which is what we're doing right now. Right. And I think the initial premise of the internet, and we talked a little bit about this last time, was this kind of interconnected, woven world where people could trade ideas. And that instantly got turned into exactly what you're describing, where power players came in and turned it into islands, and everyone's pay for play and, scavenging and selling data, and this kind of like world that we've turned into. And this Web3 stuff, with the accessibility that we put together, and that was always the idea, is like if we just raise the floor, right, and we allow more exposure for everyone, or more connectedness, or the ability to transmit ideas, thoughts, feelings, all of that kind of like stuff that comes out of when humans start talking together, that's the positive piece that is the antiseptic to the, I think, the pushback of where we've all had enough. And I think the pandemic, like that definitely like kicked this into high gear. I mean, and I've said this like I don't know how many times, but for me, the weirdest phenomenon that came out of the pandemic was Clubhouse. And I remember sitting in my basement, like, why are we talking on walkie-talkies again? This is insane. Like, what are we doing? But if you pull back, it was, we're all alone. We're getting back into just campfire stories and listening, to each other again. And that's what this is doing. Like, by making this accessible over like 3G networks and all the compression and infrastructure and things that we've put together, it's like this can go everywhere. I mean, what happens when we get into third world countries that now have access to colleges and universities and lessons and online, volumetric experiences where they can actually interact and show things and share their art or their creations or musical abilities or math or any of that kind of stuff? Because right now the world is very arbitrary depending on where you're at with what you can and can't do. I mean, I'm a closet idealist. I mean, I'm always out there with that, but there is this kind of cynicism where even like, when I look back through my own like trajectory, it's like, yeah, I work hard, and I know that I work harder than like the average Joe, and that's just like coming up from a, a farm life and a family that would like instilled that in me. But even with that, like in the perseverance and thoroughness and all the stuff that you can do, there's still like this random kind of alignment of fate or the stars or luck or whatever that has to present those opportunities for you to be able to take advantage of them. And unfortunately, not everyone gets that. Right. And
That's right. That's right.
that's
It's
what's
about access. I mean, you can't be part of a community that you don't have access to. And
exactly.
I think that's a big one. I think, I love your expression of all of this as community because, it's interesting. I watched a podcast recently where people were talking about how inadvertently social media worked to make it, to get people to engage, and what they created were addictive patterns where people couldn't not go online, and the repercussions of that have not always been good. In that middle school age, for example, being that connected, having your life that much on display, not necessarily a good thing when you're going through puberty and a whole lot of changes. And so I think, even if it was inadvertent, now it doesn't matter because big players are selling data. They're selling our data, yours, mine, and everyone else's. And so I think you're right. Until we get back to a community, it's going to be tough. There's going to be the big guys against the little individuals. And so I think unleashing a door, it's almost like what you're talking about suggests a new door into a new universe. And it's like we arrived here. It's sort of better than where we were.
Yeah.
But it's not where you can be. And you open the door and it's just all bright white light.
That's I think the best explanation of it. Like I think it is the first true blue ocean. And one of the most amazing things that's coming out of this kind of new generation, and this is like, I mean, it started happening in the millennials, right? Like I said, of kind of the internet really changing the way that we could monetize and express ideas and all those kinds of things, that movement forward, right? And as it gets younger and younger and younger, and people are born into this, like that is how they think. Like there's you nailed it. Like we're all relative of our experience, right? We all kind of form our rational thought that way. And I think what's going to come out of this, and the most beautiful thing, and not to get like too crazy out there, but like the one like thing that I think is constant about every person on earth is that everyone is unhappy with themselves relative to themselves. Like even if you are Brad Pitt, right, who's a very perfectly formed human on the outside, right, there's probably still a mole somewhere where he's like, I hate this. I mean, it doesn't matter. It's all relative, right? And the cool thing that's coming out of this space is all of that stuff kind of disappears because you can literally be what you want to be, manifested how you want to present yourself, where the limit of the range of your creativity is literally just limited by your creativity. I mean, it's this space is just crazy. It can be anything you want it to be because we're literally controlling the environment. The way I try to explain spatial web to people is think of a place where everything has intention, right? It's not like the room and the wood and the trees or whatever. Like there's static objects in these spaces that we're creating to go convey ideas. Everything can have intention, everything can have placement, everything can have meaning, which allows us to express more deeply like all of that kind of intellectual property. It doesn't matter if it's like a thought or if it's a lesson or a music or I mean anything that we do with it. And I think that piece where we're stripping away insecurities and allowing people to kind of express their thoughts, not inhibited by whatever intrinsic feelings or intrinsic things are holding them back, which holds all of us back. We all deal with this stuff every day. This allows a completely different way to communicate. And I think what comes out of that is something that we haven't experienced yet because this medium hasn't existed in this capacity ever. And that's kind of like a global thing. And
This is completely new. Like you said a minute ago, it's blue ocean. I mean, when I think about what you're saying, it speaks to a world where we can all be in a community, or we can be in our own communities, such as we devise, such as we create. But talk to me about, you're an idealist about this, and I'm, not a pessimist, but I'm certainly freaked out about the dangers that happen when you go online. The sacrifice of privacy, the sacrifice of personal data, the sacrifice of your own persona that, that happens when someone's cyber bullied or whatever. Where do you see the guardrails coming in? Is it through blockchain? Is it through Web3 that we're able to steer toward a safer domain? Because I think that's one of the things that checks people as well on social media, is it can be dangerous, or you can have it fly back in your face.
I think that's, I mean, for me, that's really the only question. I mean, everything else kind of works itself out if we fix this kind of fundamental premise. And that is, if I were to like, put on a slogan or like in some digestible bit, like what Cosmic Wire is doing, like that concept that you just described is it. That's the core functionality of what we're doing. And I, it's protecting your identity, your proxy, your entity. Like, how do we do that? And I think absolutely. It's through blockchain and containerizing because like we're not using NFTs and kind of blockchain in that mercantile way. Like the way that I see it is the internet is the chain and we're the nodes on the chain. We're the people, we're the things that are interacting with it. We all have our bubbles of proxy and zero tolerance, and that's what we've built. So you go through this kind of, minting process, for lack of better verification process, of your proxy and yourself, and that's a true zero trust environment. We don't have access to it. Platforms don't have access to it. No one has access to it. The only people that have access to it are what you're letting out, right? So this is a way to go and control your proxy and your identity and things like that. And what comes off of this, is the hashing of behaviors from those nodes, right? So if someone's doing something or cyberbullying or any of those kinds of things, because this is all token gated, your visual field or your representation, right, only sees what you're allowing to be seen, right? So if I don't ever want to talk to you or see you again, like, I just remove your hash, and then you're not in my existence anymore. And there's this
Right.
really kind of like self-policing thing that happens for people. It's like, oh, you're bullying me. Well, now you're gone, right? And not just gone, like, you don't exist, right, in my field anymore. It's much different than
Right.
someone
Right.
tracking
You're
you down and showing up at your door, because they found you on Facebook because you had pictures of your house. Like, this is a completely different thing where we can have these like deep, meaningful conversations and communities. And if something's out of hand or something you don't agree with, rather than us trying to infringe all these kind of arbitrary values and views on everyone else, which is obviously what's going on in the world right now. I mean, we're so by, segregated right now, we can't even have conversations. This is like, I'm going to allow into my field of view and my world what impacts me and what doesn't impact me. And I think that changes a fundamental precept that hasn't been available out there, because everyone's trying to police this stuff, and it's completely impossible to do that. So.
I want to get a I want to get a fix on your idealism, because I think it takes several forms, and one form is that you're idealistic about the way communities will form, that people with like or different interests will start getting better at being part of a community again. I think that's what this polarization of politics has done over the last decade, is it's that combined with a gerrymandering of districts and creating the kind of gridlock that we have in Washington. I think it's polarized people, because you live in a world now where you may not need to leave your house and you may not need to meet anyone that isn't exactly like you. And if that's happening, then of course terror will strike when you have to speak with someone that's completely different. And so I do think that there's something to be said about creating community where people are going to see differences. I'll use an example. Detroit, my city of birth and my new hometown for the last decade, just hosted the NFL draft. 750,000 people showed up. And it was amazing, because the headline on Monday after the afterglow and the hangover and looking at the city putting itself back together and taking all the banners down, it's the headline read "All Smiles." We had a great experience. There wasn't, violence. There were 275,000 people on the first day in a geographical area of a couple, of less than a mile. And they were all grooving and they were all excited and they were all meeting us, the Detroiters, on the other side of it. And so many people walked away from the experience very different. I mean, I know people who have said to me in the 10 years that I've been in Detroit, "Wow, I hear it's really starting to change. Is that true? Is it getting safer?" Those are all old narratives. But when you brought people together in a community, and it just happened to be around the NFL draft, which the NFL just made a thing. I mean, we didn't 10 years ago, we didn't even think about hanging out to find out about the drama of the draft. We just knew we were going to get new players every season. Now it's a, the NFL has turned it into a big event. But it's also a grab at community, and I don't begrudge them that. I applaud them for that. So you have this sense of community, and that's one of your idealistic principles. The other one to me is unclear, and that is, you're doing these things, you're creating this more Nirvana type environment, but you're also a commercial business. And I've heard the analysts on NASDAQ, I've heard people talking about it, I've heard about the amount of money you've raised to be able to take this thing forward. And there are a lot of people betting that what you have is exploding, and that within the next decade, you'll be a several billion-dollar company. I mean, you're going from that basement high-tech lounge you're sitting in right now to, a big piece of spatial real estate. But here's the question I have for you, Jared. You don't strike me, off camera, on camera, the couple of series we've done, you just don't strike me as someone who's necessarily all that concerned about wealth. I mean, you seem to have, you know, you seem to operate on this premise that you've got enough and that's okay and you're happy and you don't need more and you're not, you know. So talk to me about that, because this is a commercial enterprise and you are monetizing what's going to happen in Web3. So how do you square all those things? Isn't that a great question?
If I mean, you have a philosophical core of existentialist day. No, I mean, I dig it,
Exactly.
but yeah, I mean, it comes again from, like, I think, relative experience. I've been on both sides of the spectrum pretty heavily. You know, I've had times where, you know, we had nothing, and I've had times where I've had, you know, high levels of extravagance. And for me, I think the thing that really kind of cut through it all is when, in those times of nothing or those times of extreme extravagance, like, what do I kind of gravitate towards again? And it always ends up just kind of like, you know, my wife, my kids, like having food,
Right.
not having to worry about where the food's coming from. But, like, once you kind of get to a place of equilibrium of that, like, the other stuff, I mean, obviously, like we like to travel and have fun and things like that, but it's never been like the motivation. The motivation for me was, like, I just want us to be able to live the life that we want to live and not be fear of losing that, right? And if I can secure that piece to where we're, you know, in a good place, where we're in a homogenous, stable environment, we're all enjoying our time together, because that's, at the end of the day, that's what it is, right? It's like, how do we make the most of our time on the rock, flying around the sun, right? So
Well,
it's
you talk so much about your kids, and I love that, because when I think back over a career that's further along than yours, you know, I have two children as well. They're grown now and they're in their 30s, and both boys, and they're living on their own, and they're living from my, you know, from my vantage point, they appear to be living the best version of themselves. They're both doing well. And to me, you know, as I look at the spectrum of commerce and I look at what's going on, that's the most important consideration when I think about it at the end of every day. Am I happy with where my family is in terms of, like you said, storing food, having enough to eat, having a good place to go, having some, you know, not having to worry about any of that, and adding on to it a couple of, you know, meaningful, fun experiences, travel, et cetera. You know, beyond that, you know, it doesn't get better than that in my mind. More money doesn't necessarily make that any better, unless you're really super obsessed on how you get there and the jet or the, you know, car you take. You know, if those things are of import to you, then you probably need more money. But I think you're right. I think many, many more people would feel good just to get some of this anxiety that social media and technology have created, and just get to a point where, you know, life is back to a green space. You know, it's relatively serene. It doesn't have that many clouds or that many potholes in front of us.
It is a bit of a sales pitch, man. I mean, you have to think about, like, how the whole stuff is constructed. And, like, we've done, I came out of mental health and behavioral science heavily. And so, like, when I really got into this kind of, like, analytical side of it, and, like, understanding how the click funnels are put together, and dopamine, and how much time people, and when that, like, goes off, and the retention rate of to achieve that, and then how the ads are structured together. And we're real, like, it is a mousetrap we built for ourselves, and we're getting better and better and better at it, and people don't escape it. It's like, all you do all day is sit and doom scroll through Instagram and look at versions of your life that you're not doing, which those people aren't doing either. It's all kind of like manufactured garbage. We have filters and all this stuff, right? And you can get stuck in that kind of, like, ego rat trap forever. It doesn't matter if you own one Ferrari, 27 Ferraris. Like, it never matters, right? Because it's, if you're in that race, there's nothing to win, right?
Right.
It's just,
Right.
it becomes a different thing. And that's, I think that this degen community, you know, that lives in, like, Discord and these other kind of, like, mediums, where, like, there is no kind of, like, visual representation, and we get back kind of like Clubhouse, you know, like you see this kind of genuine, authentic, value-based thing that's happening. And even if we're arguing, you know, I went to a Jesuit college. I mean, I wasn't Catholic, but it was my favorite debates, and my favorite part of, like, going there was always, like, the religious versus phil or you know, faith versus reason debates, you know. And it was like seeing these, like, diametric views come together, who are completely antithetical, but be able to trade ideas that challenge each other, right? And there is that kind of a thing that this is doing, that has been watered down by everything else that we're talking about. So we're all chasing carrots of garbage. more or less, right? And I think it's across the board. But
I agree. I think there's another source of that optimism, though, and I think it comes with your generation and those that have followed those of us on the Oregon Trail and behind it. And that is, I see a lot more emerging regard for stewarding this planet and stewarding a stronger sense of community among a younger generation. I'm privy to a lot of conversations with executives where people start talking about, the millennials. And slackers and all this. And I gotta be honest, I see no evidence of that. I see a generation coming up that is more intentional about breaking down barriers, labels, everything from identity, politics to everything. And I also see them saying, we're not gonna wait. We're not gonna assume that big business is gonna fix this. We're not gonna assume that the government's gonna fix this. We're going to come up with our own ideas and we're gonna pursue them because we need to save this planet for ourselves and our children. And I think that's another thread of that optimism, I think. And do you see that as well as part of this journey?
I think it's absolutely true. I mean, there is this kind of amorphous thing that comes out of it, as we become more commingled, right? The boxes matter less. And that's always been,
Right.
yeah. I think that philosophy goes as far back as, since the first person, But I'm hopeful
So,
about that, but there is the other side of it, man. I mean, there is like a really kind of dark side that comes out of the blockchain stuff too. And but that's every kind of like piece of technology. And so we're here to like pave the path and show use cases of things that we know that we can impact and that we know that will benefit from this stuff. Like I try not to focus on like the people that are going to subvert the system because that's just a never ending an exercise as well. Like when
right.
people talk about like blockchain and cybersecurity and how we're protecting is like is this bulletproof? Is this the fix? I'm like, well, no, it's not. But here is your database. How many emails do you get about your stuff being hacked constantly? Like we all get these weekly, right? But we're approaching zero. This is better than what it was, and that's the idea is that if we keep pushing forward, we're getting better and more efficient with these systems, and that's what this is at the heart. And what you're talking about is the exact same thing. Like as more continued evolved conversation, as we push more people together, like it's going to erode those shells and systems because by exposure to things that you're not exposed to, it makes us all more aware of what's around us, and that's what
To
this
our
is.
listening and viewing audience, this has been Ron Stefanski on Disrupt Ed, talking about the massive disruption in the world of technology and Web3 with none other than our friend, Jared Fink, the CEO of Cosmic Wire, who you have to just sit down, strap in, and listen to because his outlook is just incredible. Jared, I think you're onto something big. I think you have a way of expressing it that helps all of us kind of take our blood pressure down. I listen to you and I say, okay, things are going to be okay. The chatbots are not going to get us. The cyber hounds are not going to, be at the gates. And I think you paint a really great blue ocean to follow with Web3. And I think that's the most important thing because, I see it in so many small ways. And I think what you're going to unleash is taking all those small ways that things are getting better and sort of manifesting them in this blue ocean called community. And I think that's where it's most exciting and that's where I'm most optimistic. And I absolutely share your enthusiasm for that kind of a, blue space. So thank you. Any last thoughts before we wrap on this episode of Disrupt Ed?
I just I want people not to be afraid of Web3. I want them not to be like shying away from this stuff because this is really meaningful. I mean, it's not, and we talked about this before, but this is really similar to like around 2000 when people were trying like, why am I going to email? Why am I going to text message? Why would I do any of this stuff? I mean, I remember the same things. This is going to fundamentally change the way that humans interact and trade and transact. Every day moving forward, right? This is not the end. This is not, we've gone through all these spikes, but major infrastructure is moving into this now. Everyone's understanding the efficiencies and what's going to come out of this. And this is something that is going to enhance and potentially change every person's life. This isn't like some idealistic garbage. Like this technology is raising the floor of human connection at a global level, and it's happening right now, right? It's coming right now. So.
Yeah, I think that's powerful. And I think, what I've most enjoyed about our conversations is I am one of those people before the Oregon Trail. I'm one of those people who grew up mostly analog. And so what you don't know scares you. And I have to say, in all of our conversations off camera and here, you do a very, very powerful job of creating a world that you're actually building. That is going to bring safeguards, is going to bring increased access to all the things that make life matter for most of us. And I think that's very cool. And I want to continue this conversation as existential as it's become. I think there are a lot of us who are anxious to hear more about how we think about technology, not in digital terms, but how we think about it in spatial and human terms, because I think that's ultimately the journey we're on, right?
Yeah,
And so,
100%.
on that note, I want to thank you for joining us and I want to invite you back again. We're not done with this conversation. And stay tuned, give us your feedback, get disrupted with us. If you liked what you heard or you didn't, we want to hear from you. Get engaged, give us your, shares, likes, and comments, and join us once again for another episode of Disrupt Ed. Thank you.